Rocanjo with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. It's a solemn day in America, September 11th. And I read a story this week about Al-Qaeda. Because we've forgotten about Al-Qaeda. We don't talk about international terrorism so much anymore. The threats that the politicians like to talk about are domestic, right? Whether it's political parties or Mexicans or whatever it happens to be.
Right.
And we've stopped talking about that. And I thought this would be a good moment to talk to Bob Baer, one of the most decorated, if not the most decorated, publicly acknowledged CIA officer in the history of that agency. And Bob, is Al-Qaeda still alive and well?
Oh, I think it absolutely is. I think you're going to see that it's regrouped in the wake of what's happened in Syria and Iraq. With Iraq now moving back to chaos, you're going to see this sort of reordering of the Sunni community there, and they're going to turn to violence. I think what we're seeing, the reason we don't notice it is because the worst sides of Al-Qaeda, you know, the attacks in Istanbul and Paris and the rest of it, have just sort of gone away thanks to policing and thanks to people just deciding that it's not going to do them any good to kill, you know, kill tourists in France. No, it's not going to go away. Zawahiri is still there. He's hiding in Pakistan. There's this belief that violence is the only way that's going to save the Sunni majority in the Middle East.
And people should realize that ISIS and Al-Qaeda are different things, and Al-Shabaab, there's a number of these different organizations. And one of the pieces in this article that I thought was fascinating is that Al-Qaeda has changed, as you're pointing to, has changed its tactics. They no longer want to spend time and money developing people that they are going to sacrifice, that they are going to kill in their own actions, like they did on September 11th. They want it. They if they're going to spend time and money training people, they want those people to be able to survive the incident. Is that what your friends still in the business are telling you?
Well, we don't see as many suicide attacks except in Afghanistan, and that's sort of a one-off. But you just have to see that it's become more pragmatic, Al-Qaeda. Clearly, running airplanes into American buildings and killing 3,000 civilians it got them nothing. They're a lot worse off for it. Or even the Islamic State beheading journalists, it got them nothing. It was completely counterproductive for them, and I think you're seeing a more mature organization that's going to defend the community and use Islam as a basis for it. But they haven't gone away. They've just sort of gone underground, and they're going to wait to see what happens in Syria and Iraq. And it's almost guaranteed they're going to come back.
Is America today safer or less safe than it was on September 10th of 2001?
I think we're a lot safer. You've had software has been developed to detect people radicalization. A lot of these people are being rolled up very quickly. We've given up certain liberties, but I think we're definitely safer. And I think we saw two attacks in the United States, San Bernardino and Florida, Orlando. But it's fairly minor. And this fear that we had the enemy within in this country, it just turned out not to be true. And I think, you know, everybody's just sort of caught on that this has been absolutely a total disaster, 9/11, for us, for our politics, for the Middle East, and things are not better. So the whole idea that terror, you know, idealization of violence is going to get you anything has just disappeared.
Now, as you look at the political landscape here, do you think that the priorities at the Pentagon level are the right priorities for this?
I think, you know, frankly, I think it's almost, and I've had people at the Pentagon say this to me, that we won the battle on terror with Flight 93 when we figured out to take weapons away from these people. It was almost simultaneous, but now we're fighting on way too many fronts. We don't even know what the battle is about in Niger or Mali or the rest of it. It's just sort of an insurgency which we got caught in, and we can put drones up forever, but we're not going to kill an idea with it. We're overextended, and we're losing political influence. Matt, when you got Russian troops defending our main ally in the Middle East, Israel, that's a sea change.
Do you think, it's interesting you mentioned that, because there was some talk earlier, it was late last week, that the Russians were warning U.S. forces in Syria, ground forces that are in Syria, special operators, that they needed to get out of a base that they were near because they were going to attack that base, because that base that had the anti-Assad partisans were attacking the Russians and the Assad forces. And so it's a weird situation that we're being told by the Russians and by the Assad people, hey, get out of the way here because we're coming after the guys that you're basing up with.
It's everything's upside down. The Russians haven't taken and occupied land militarily since 1946. This is the first time. You know, I'm looking at this as almost as the Cold War 2.0, and I guarantee you the way they've split this country apart on this Russian saga, they're winning. Or these far-right parties, Austria and Italy and Hungary, you know, allied with Russia. I mean, it's amazing, this change. We walked away in 91, patting ourselves on the back. Look, we won the Cold War. All done. Russia's a second-rate power. We have to be tolerant of them. And they've just come back. And they're still a second-rate nation, but they've managed to divide us like we've never been divided during the real Cold War, the old Cold War.
You look at 9/11, Bob, and which began the U.S.-led invasion into Afghanistan, and here we are nearly 17 years later. Initially, they talked about the idea was to capture Osama bin Laden, to break apart al-Qaeda, and then the focus became fighting the Taliban. And what now? What do you see as the future of troops in Afghanistan and what the U.S. goals actually are there?
Well, it's not winnable because we were fighting a Pashtun tribal confederation. And now, in fact, today, they're talking in the White House about privatizing the war, turning to Eric Prince and Frontier Services and seeing if he can do a better job, simply because we're losing ground there. We continue to. You can't take a minority like the Tajiks and fight the Pashtuns indefinitely. And these people just don't give up. It really is the graveyard of empires. And we're going to have to find a different way to do this. And I think the Russians, by the way, it's pretty evident that they are supporting the Taliban with weapons and money.
Yeah, well, turn around, right? I mean, this is you just want to look at how this, you know, when they were there, we were supporting them, right? Charlie Wilson's war. Mm-hmm. And now it's, you know, it's clear that this game of international ping pong for 100 years continues. It's interesting that you mentioned privatization. Now, Eric Prince, of course, that's Blackwater. That's Betsy DeVos's brother, right? There's, you know, he's very politically connected. Those, you know, the other countries, we would call them mercenaries here. We call them contractors. But these contractors have been playing a role since the beginning, since 2001, haven't they? And what is your, as a professional CIA, former CIA operative guy who's on the ground in these countries working for the United States of America, not for a private company, what is your thought on that?
You have to look at history. It's never gone well. Blackwater didn't do too well in Iraq when they shot up those civilians. And five guys were indicted. It's tough to run these groups. But on the other hand, militarily, we are failing in Afghanistan, and we have really since the beginning. I mean, let's face it: the people who protected Osama bin Laden in October 2001 was the government of Pakistan. There's just no doubt about it. He went to Abbottabad. He was put in a house. In a military garrison, and that's our main ally. And these are the guys that we depend upon to supply our troops. The Pakistanis are completely unreliable. We've been paying them billions of dollars, and I you know, share very few sentiments with this president, but one is just total frustration about the Pakistanis. Yeah. And so if we don't have allies on the ground, and even in the war in Iraq, our main ally was effectively Iran. So it's a situation that's so schizophrenic, you really don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah. We will leave it there. But Bob, thank you so much. I know this is a solemn day for everybody, especially for all of your folks who, you know, the first person to die in the war on terror in the fall of 2001 was a CIA operative, not
Mike Spann.
Right. And it should be remembered that those are the first guys on the ground there. So thank you for your service to the country, sir. Appreciate it, as always.
Thank you.
Bob Baer. All right, let's check in with Judy Pilak. What's coming up in the news at the top of the hour?
A crisis that could last a very long time.
Traffic being brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation.